Hi, this is Dan Gilvezan, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Welcome to The Pull Bags, Back Issue Classics. Join us as we talk about comics from yesteryear, from DC, Marvel, and more. So open your ears to hear our discussion of the older continuities, as the Back Issue Classics are also what's in The Pull Bag.
Hello and welcome to The Pullback. This is Back Issue Classics, episode 81. I'm, of course, TFG on Mike, and this is the start of the first annual, I don't know if it'll be annual or not, but the first annual Autobotley April. Now, people might be looking at me or listening to this and say, what the fuck does Autobotley mean? There was a clip from years and years ago, one of my first podcasts, the TFG on podcast, where I was where I was reviewing the old G1 cartoon series. And one of the co-hosts, Pecan Crumb Michael, said something about Skylynx holding a bunch of guns in his ass was not exactly Autobotley. I believe this was from Five Faces of Darkness or something or other. So, Autobotley April, we are going to be covering a bunch of Transformers comics. Lady Wreck, Beatles Diva, and Holly Prime will be back to do the Windblade stuff with me. But I brought in Ryan the Uneven Flow Merkley because he loves Transformers comics just as much as I do. And sadly, Spade of the Bolt Matrix, well, he was given the Decepticon Matrix of Leadership, even though that doesn't exist technically. And he's off, you know, taking a plasma bath somewhere. And he landed on Webworld or something. I don't know. But in Autobotley April, we are going to be covering More Than Meets the Eye from IDW, Volumes 6 and 7.
A.K.A. the good one.
Yeah, A.K.A. the good one. More Than Meets the Eye, Volumes 6 and 7 is going to be this podcast. Over the next 3 weeks after this, we're going to get rid Volumes 6 and 7.
Which got renamed to The Transformers.
Yes, which is, you know, now it's, you know, the book formerly known as RID, kind of like the artist formerly known as Prince.
Yeah, they call it X-RID on the forums, generally.
Most people that I talk to call it not RID. So RID 6 and 7 will be one episode, and then RID's 8 and Volume 8 and 9 will be another, and then we'll close it out with More Than Meets the Eye, Volumes 8 and 9. So yeah, a bunch of trade stuff, and basically how we're going to do this is Ryan is going to synopsize each issue briefly, and then we're going to go through our notes and discuss the comic. We're not going to go through page by page, panel by panel, like I normally would do in certain episodes, because we would be here for 5 hours, folks, and no one wants to listen to us for 5 hours.
Don't hear me. I'm not going to object to that. I know you're expecting me to say something witty there, but... No.
Well, yeah, because that's your job.
No, it's not. All right, anyway. fine. We begin with... So, first of all, for anyone who doesn't know, this is in the aftermath of the Dark Cybertron giant story arc.
Yep. You guys can go back to the Dark Cybertron episode Nicole, Beatles Diva, and I did. We spent 3 hours talking about Dark Cybertron.
Which was all right, but definitely not great. And the biggest event of that, and this ties directly into this first trade, and really all the others for this whole run of More Than Meets the Eye, probably the biggest event was the death of Bumblebee, which subsequently caused, along with Shockwave's sort of betrayal of the Decepticon ideals, caused Megatron to finally switch sides.
Yes, Megatron is now an Autobot, ladies and gentlemen. Deal with it.
Which, to be blunt, was not handled well in Dark Cybertron. Like, it happened way too quickly. And
yeah, it did.
So the first issue of More Than Meets the Eye, which is 28, we get portions of it told in flashback to the trial of Megatron. Actually, the pre-trial, I should say, mm-hmm. of Megatron. While the up-to-date stuff is what's happening on board the Lost Light, which has been sent out yet again to try to find Cyber Utopia and the Knights of Cybertron to try to help fix the planet Cybertron, which is essentially a gigantic dump.
Yep.
So there, that pretty much summed it up, to be honest.
With issue 28, you know, we got to run down the creative here. It's James Roberts on writing for More Than Meets the Eye. It's Alex Milne, I believe is how he says his name.
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure. On art, who is on colors for this? Is it Joanna?
Colors is Josh Burcham.
Josh Burcham.
And yes, Joanna LeFluent, depending on... Or sorry, LeFuente.
Yeah.
Depending on which issues. Burcham right. did 28. LeFuente did 29 to 33, which okay. is in this trade. And then the lettering is done by Tom Long, who, by the way, does an amazing job. It should be noted that Milne's... I'm not going to bother gushing over the art in every issue. Milne is amazing.
Yes, he
and
is.
And Tom Long is one of the best letterers I've seen in all of comics. His ability to fit everything in well and make everything clear and easy to read is mm-hmm. astounding in a book that has this much dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, definite props to him. And
because
yeah,
Roberts... with Roberts' writing style, Roberts is, I dare I say, he is the Stephen King of Transformers writers. By this, I mean he writes a lot of stuff. Like, he
yeah.
the way his writing style is, after reading through this and reading through Volume 7, which we'll talk about later, the man... not only does dialogue well, but he does actual the storytelling, setting up, you know, how events are unfolding, whether it's through internal monologue, whether it's through speaking scenes, whether it's through whatever. And it, I swear, it reads like the way Stephen King writes.
So overall, I mean, the dialogue, it kind of snaps, and it's that mm-hmm. in a lot of cases, it's the witty sort of Joss Whedon dialogue.
Yep.
Now, one of the criticisms of Whedon is that in a lot of cases, his witty dialogue can be substituted from character to character.
Yeah.
As in, you know, any of it could fit anyone he writes. And it's not necessarily always fair, but in any case, a lot of people have tried to attribute that to Roberts. I don't see it in these issues. I mean, Megatron stuff, for example... You know, there's stuff like his line to Rung, who's the ship's psychiatrist, analyzing him, and it's his wonderful line about Rung, sometimes a fusion cannon is just a fusion cannon.
Mm-hmm.
A reference to Freud, of course. But stuff like that, you know, it fits the character, and mm-hmm. it's about the character.
Yeah.
And the other thing Roberts does well in this issue and all of these is set up for future stuff, which I'm going to try really hard not to spoil, because there are individual lines in these books that mean something a year to 2 years later. Some of the worst being the season one More Than Meets the Eye stuff. The lines in that actually come back at the end of season two, so 5 years later.
Yeah.
And I love that. So anyway.
That's the way you play the long game. So as I'm reading through this issue, color-coded lasers, red for Autobot, purple for Decepticon. That was hilarious.
Yeah, I liked the line afterwards from Nautica, who's a new introduction, who fits yeah. in really well.
Mm-hmm.
Nautica's bit that, yeah, you don't think color-coding, you know, trying to be generic, eat good and evil...
yeah.
Works, which it does not. And one of the themes in this season is very much sort of the redemption or Megatron's past catching up to him.
Oh, yeah.
And
very
his attempts
much so.
At redemption. And doesn't go real well.
No, not at all.
And in fact, in the first issue, yeah, he gets jumped by Whirl,
mm-hmm.
who borrowed Atomizer's crossbow.
Yep. And remember, it's not the table's fault.
Yeah, Prowl. He gets a lot of verbal abuse. Yeah. Although it's deserved, because Prowl's a prick.
Yeah, Prowl's a prick in this series. At least in the whole of the IDW continuity.
Yeah.
Poor Blue Streak. We can't take anyone... remind Rodimus of Prowl. Blue Streak always gets the bad rap, man.
Yeah. So that's part of the swerve in sort of a comedy bit.
Yep.
Does crew auditions, as he calls it, crew auditions to try to decide who should be on the Lost Light and who shouldn't.
And hey, look, it's Nightbeat.
Yeah, so Nightbeat returned from the dead in
Dark Cybertron.
Nightbeat's always been one of Robert's favorite characters. If you go back and read Eugenesis, which was his fanfic novel that would result in him getting a job with IDW writing. Knight Beat's the central character. So he's always had a soft spot for him, and he gets to use him this season.
A lot, yeah. And the sad thing is, because I know he's one of your, if not your favorite character, every time I was reading this, all of a sudden, this is so sad. I heard your voice in my head the whole damn time.
Well, I don't think Nightbeat speaks with the horrific monotone tone.
I'm just saying, with the words that Roberts gives him, it's crap that you would say. It's don't logical me. Stuff that you would be saying. Oh, crap.
So kind of the overall takeaway from this issue is the crew is not happy with Megatron being on board.
Nope.
Which, can you really blame them? He killed, you know, millions and millions of Autobots, not to mention committed genocide all over different planets and exterminated organic races. So, yeah, he's not popular for some reason.
Yeah, and it goes, like you said earlier, it goes back and forth between 6 months ago and 6 months later where we, you know, the present day is the Lost Light stuff, and then they go back to the trial. I'm going to say this right now. This is nothing against Roberts directly, but when I first read this, and keep in mind, I was reading these as they came out however many years ago this was, the trial put me to sleep.
Well,
I'm saying when I first read them, for some odd reason, the trial bored the ever-living crap out of me.
I want to get into the trial a little bit more with the next issue.
Okay, but fine.
I will say, like, the one thing about Season 2, probably even more than Season 1, it all works better in trade, especially the 10th trade, which is the culmination and the season finale.
Right.
Worked way better than it did in individual issues, because that's how I read it. And then, you know, I've gone back, I buy all the trades, I reread them constantly to the point that a couple of them are already sort of not in great shape. So yeah, I mentioned the next issue. I may as well,
before we get to 29, I got one last note for 28. An Autobot coffin. Dark Awakening, anybody?
That's what I want to get into. So the issue ends with they find a coffin.
Yeah.
And as we open issue, the second issue of this, which is 29, they've brought the coffin on board. B, Tailgate has recovered from his near-death experience way back in the 5th trade of More Than Meets the Eye. So he sat out Dark Cybertron. He also wakes up and finds out, oh, Megatron's now co-captain. And Swerve has one of the legislator robots, 10, guarding the bar now. But we continue on with the trial in this, and we're split between the trial and then the present day, in which the two big events in the present day, like I said, I'll get into the trial in a second. The two biggest events present day are we see Chrome Dome has been seeing Rewind, his... essentially his husband,
yes,
Conjux Endura, who died way back in the 4th trade, has been seeing ghost images of him while portions of the ship, including Nightbeat's quarters, are disappearing. And then the other big event is the coffin is brought on board and revealed. And again, this is interspersed with the trial. Now, I just want to start with the trial here.
Go ahead.
And my summation, it contains two of the best portions of this book that sum up why I love it. One is Starscream's speech about Megatron, where he absolutely buries him without so much as, you know, calling him names or anything like that, is glorious and pure Starscream. It worked so well. It is one of my favorite moments of this entire book. So I absolutely love that bit. And then the other part of the trial, which I believe is from this issue, and it may not be.
The changing of the plea.
Yeah, I liked that. It's in the next issue. Damn it.
Okay.
The other portion of the issue, or hell with it, I'll just mention it. The other portion of the trial I really liked is the bits with Rodimus and the data pad, which he receives in this issue, but we'll get to the resolution of that because it's in the next one.
Yes,
there we go. So anyway,
oh, poor Rodimus.
So yeah, trial stuff. I don't care what they would have done. I would have loved the trial stuff if it had gone on for 700 more pages with saying nothing, just if that Starscream speech were in there. It is glorious and sums up his character so well. He's such a prick in this. Like, he is a conniving, backstabbing scumbag interested only in his own power.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it so well just through dialogue.
Oh, yeah. Because you don't need him. You don't need Starscream in this series to pull out his null ray and blast somebody. You just have him talk.
But they did in R.I.D. That was the thing. Like, they had him, you know, that's how he came to power. I'm just saying it's nice to see him just use his tongue to be absolute scum.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that. So, yeah, the issue was a winner just based on that for me. Present day stuff, you know, without ruining the reveal, I mean, the corpse inside the coffin is Rodimus.
Yeah. Well, yeah, before we get to that, my first note for 29 before we move on to 30 was, see, folks, Rodimus is more than just a new leader in this series. He's a proven battle-hardened guy who admittedly makes mistakes. And then we get the coffin reveal, and I pretty much lost it at this point. Like, I pretty much, even on my reread of this trade, half the time, I'm going to admit it right now, I had to reread certain panels, various pages, because I did not know what the hell was going on until they eventually explained the shit.
Well, that's the part of it. I mean, this whole arc is Slaughterhouse, and the sort of stuff doesn't click together until the last and second last issues.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the present day and past day stuff kind of tying together, first of all, I mean, Seronimus takes the data pad from Atomizer, which supposedly has the list of all of the people who wanted him
gone.
Off Lost Light
for
being a terrible captain, which, to be blunt, he was.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of continues to be, as Megatron berates him in this as well, for A, they have no director of security, so he posts Trailbreaker, who is a useless drunk at this point in the series. B, I mean, Rodimus is never there. It takes his own corpse to get him out of his suite, as we'll see in the next issue. But, I mean, Rodimus is not doing anything here as captain. So I liked his arc that really gets started with the taking of the data pad and reading about who wants to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I love the reveal, though, of the whole data pad thing with Ratchet.
Yeah, which is
my God.
Issue.
Yeah. With 30, as I started reading issue 30, I'll say this right now, it's kind of jarring for me for the whole back and forth. Past, present, past, present, past, present. At least on the reread it was. I don't know if it was initially when I first got the issues, but sometimes going back and forth, it just, I don't know, it was just kind of weird.
The trial is something that could have and possibly should have been handled in Dark Cybertron, but that was so rushed what happened was Roberts had to go back because without it, there's so little context given for why Megatron switched sides.
Yeah.
It was just poorly handled, and I appreciate the fact that, he went back to kind of fix it. It gave him an opportunity to do stuff with Rodimus's growth that we see in 30.
Mm-hmm.
And, his growth, quote-unquote. So, I guess I'll summarize 30. We begin with the trial where Megatron gets broken out by all of the prisoners that were captured way back in the fourth trade of Lost Light. And from there, fourth trade or third? No, third trade, I think. That was a while ago. Wow. Anyway.
Yep.
They bust out Megatron, and he actually refuses to leave.
Yep. My favorite, I do remember when I went to my local comic shop to get issue 30, and I had seen the covers that were going to be happening, going to be coming out beforehand. I wanted that subcover so bad, I told them, look, you need to make sure you have this subcover. The subcover is Rodimus handing the keys to the Lost Light to Megatron.
He's gloating, yes.
Yes, it's just one of the best covers of this series to this point. We should also note, we didn't note this earlier, I think it's on this series and the other one as well. The whole point of Aftermath of Dark Cybertron is they're calling this arc Dawn of the Autobots.
Yeah, because the Autobots have won the war. And post-Dark Cybertron, the Decepticons, we'll see in the other series, don't have a leader for a bit.
Yeah.
And then they start sort of branching off. But, you know, get into that later.
Yep.
In this series, we continue on with the trial. Rodimus, in present day, comes out and looks at his corpse, and Megatron berates him to his face for taking stock, as Rodimus says, which, by the way, I love that goes back in Megatron's face much later in another trade that we are not talking about. So anyway, Megatron agrees to a plea deal where he will be executed upon the finding, whatever you want to call it. Whenever the Knights of Cybertron are found, Megatron will then be executed.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially he takes the guilty plea, but through a loophole is allowed to go on the Lost Light journey to try to find them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's given a speech, which we'll get to that a little later.
Well, the speech, after I read the whole thing with the speech, my note is Megatron. Megatron is owning up to his own evil ways, something I thought we'd never see in any Transformers fiction.
I adored the speech, so I guess we will get into it. All right. some of the stuff, you know, although I reject the charges against me, I do not deny that I am the founder of the Decepticon movement. I started it, and I am about to finish it. I hereby renounce Decepticonism and its offshoots and denounce all those who continue to fight in its name. There's nothing intrinsically special about our race, nothing that lifts us above non-mechanical species. We were wrong to assert ourselves. And to all those who follow me, I say this. Do not expect guidance or wisdom or answers. I have none. I never did. To all those Decepticons still out there, I give one final order. Stand down. Discard your weapons, tear off your badges, and stand down. Free yourself from the shackles of a flawed philosophy and move on. The Decepticons are over. The war is over. And thankfully, we lost. I loved that. That is some
brilliant.
I need
somebody to send that to Frank Welker to make sure he says that in Megatron's voice.
The speeches he does through the trial story, he being Roberts, are exceptionally well done.
Oh, absolutely. The writing is so good in this.
Back to present day, they investigate the dead Rodimus. And they can't figure out the fact that, dead Rodimus resembles the... how was it? We'll get into that later.
The present-day Rodimus, somewhat.
It resembles the present-day, yes, somewhat, but resembles the past one, and we'll see why.
Yeah.
A little better. So anyway.
Yeah. And then we kind of get to the point where the Lost Light is disintegrating.
Yep.
And everybody has to basically, you know, get to the shuttles, and they abandon ship. They abandon ship, but hey, look, guess what? One of the ships they abandon in the Rod Pod.
In a flashback, we see it's been rebuilt. The Rod Pod is Rodimus's horrific ship that's shaped like his head, because he's a terrible egomaniac.
Love the Rod Pod.
During that exchange, Rodimus destroys the list after showing it to Ratchet and asking him, you know, what he should do with the list of all of the people who don't want him on board anymore. And Ratchet tells him to just move on, et cetera, et cetera. Rodimus destroys it, and Ratchet just says, good, because it's a fake. And Rodimus asks him, is it? How do you know? And Ratchet replies with, because my name's not on it, which is wonderful. So, I mean, we know Ratchet's one of the people who didn't want him back as captain.
Ratchet in this series is
glorious.
Amazing. Yeah. Between the whole thing with Pharma and the hands and everything else way back when, to oh my God, I have never realized Ratchet could be written this well.
And then lastly, we end with some more dialogue that I adored, which was, as they all, you know, jump ship, Rodimus and Megatron are yelling, well, it's mostly Rodimus, is yelling at Megatron over the comm system, telling him, I'm blaming you for this, Megatron, this has got you all over it. And then Megatron says, sorry, not guilty, which is a cute reference to the trial.
Yep.
That was another fun issue.
It was so fun. It really, really was. I, you know, and again, Milne's art is great. The colors are great. Yeah. I honestly didn't think that I could really believe Megatron with an Autobot symbol on him. But, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the scene where they're going to break him out, where C-Wing says, the backpack, grab it, and Megatron, I'm sorry, C-Wing, it was a nice gesture. It looks like, the way that this is colored, the way that Milne drew it, it looks as if his Decepticon symbol has either been taped over with an Autobot symbol, or his Decepticon symbol has been ripped off, and an Autobot symbol is underneath.
Which it was, might I add.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, that's why. It's just good attention to detail. I'll note one other thing, too. Throughout this series, some of the touches that Milne in particular is great at, if you watch the Autobot insignia on Megatron's chest, its expression changes based on Megatron's expression.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this glorious page in in the last issue of this season before the last two sort of tie into Titan's Return, but the last issue of the main arc features an incredibly angry Megatron with the fusion cannon smoldering and tearing into Decepticons, and the Autobot insignia looks as furious as he does.
Wow.
But there's a lot of that. If you read even these issues and pay enough attention, yeah, it's expression changes based on his, which is a really cute touch.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I like that. I appreciate, from a writing standpoint, I appreciate that this was the last issue we get flashbacks.
Yep.
From now on, we're present day, with the exception of we open with how the Autobots received the Lost Light.
That was awesome.
Which was just a, you know, cute, like, three-page bit with Drift.
Yeah, because it brought Drift back for us.
Yes, he won't return for a while. Yeah. But who'd have thought I'd like Drift, by the way? Because I hated him during the McCarthy stuff, and then he was terribly written all through, well, everyone was terribly written all through Costa's run. And for, yeah, whatever reason, Robert saw something there and kind of redeemed him, which is impressive work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we return to present day with the next issue. So the Autobots Autobots, Decepticons, everybody has evacuated the Lost Light. And now they're in space, and one by one, the crew on the Rod Pod is disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
The Rod Pod contains Megatron, Crosscut, Skids, Gears, that's right, Blaster, Getaway, Nautica, Ammo, who is not used very often, wow, Huffer, Chrome Dome, Swerve, Hoist, Nightbeat, Riptide, Tailgate, Dipstick, by the way, who made his debut back in Last Stand of the Wreckers, Mm-hmm. Cyclonus, Hound, Ratchet, and Highbrow.
I love Megatron's line, "You Autobots always live in the past."
Yeah.
I love that one. Because you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Galvatron at the end of the movie. "You Autobots die so easily." That's what it reminds me of.
So, as you die, the most important things here are Nightbeat asks for everyone's history in terms of how they were born. This is important much later for Megatron in particular, because Megatron refuses to say.
We learn
much later why, and not to mention why he would refuse.
Yeah.
Number two, as everyone's disappearing, Nightbeat's trying to figure out, you know, exactly why it is. But also, Hound spots Ravage on board. So Ravage, at some point, we saw him earlier, might I add, so we, the audience, knew he was there.
Mm-hmm.
But Ravage is on board the Lost Light.
And I think this is interesting. I think this is interesting because the only other time I've ever seen Hound and Ravage together was in an early G1 episode when Hound and Spike were going after him and were going to capture him. This is like More Than Meets the Eye Part 3, I think, or maybe the episode after that. So,
yeah, it was early. To be fair, by the way, Ravage in this series and these comics can talk, which, by the way, I much prefer.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the issue ends. Nightbeat figures out why everyone's disappearing, at which point Megatron berates him because he figures it out after everyone's already disappeared.
Disappeared, yeah. Why weren't you able to stop this? Exactly.
Yeah, everybody disappeared the ones who disappeared were all the crew that were on board the Lost Light when it launched.
Mm-hmm.
Way back in issue one. Mm-hmm. Dun, dun, dun.
Yep, and that's where 32 opens up, where we have the explanation of, oh, there were eventually two Lost Lights because of things.
The quantum engines in the Lost Light work similar to sort of jump engines in Battlestar Galactica, where it just sort of jumps to a different place and appears in another one. And when the Lost Light exploded, again, way back in issue one, because one of Prowl's idiots, I can't remember if it was Shocker or Orr, it was one of them. Or sorry, Shocker or Orr. Anyway, one of them got themselves stuck in the quantum engine and caused a gigantic sort of failure. Mm-hmm. This created the second Lost Light, which our crew now find themselves aboard.
Yep. Hey, this is Swerves. Are you sure it's trash? Must have been a good night.
Yeah. And they very quickly discover the crew dead. And that's obviously bad.
Very bad. I love Ravage in this. I love him.
Megatron is glorious. Another amazing speech. So, you know, they continue investigating. They discover that there is a copy of Overlord on board as well, who's been killed. And at this point, everyone kind of figures out simultaneously that everybody on board this duplicate Lost Light was slaughtered by the Decepticon Justice Division.
Mm-hmm.
And we get some... Man, so... that's really the end of the issue, so I'll just get into some of the points. All right, I said I wasn't going to gush over art, but my God, is the art good in this.
It's so good.
The corpses, like, this is... The corpses, the battle scenes where you see the DJD slaughtering the crew. Everything is so well done in this. And in terms of the writing, I mentioned it before, two moments that stick out to me, and then I'll shut up. The Megatron Ravage conversation, which again does a great job of illustrating why Megatron wants to change.
Yeah.
And it even ties into some of the Costa stuff, which I was really impressed with. The fact that he can kind of Roberts is trying to reconcile the evil twirling mustache villainy of the Costa Megatron to this one is really impressive, and does it in a way that's somewhat believable. And then the other moment that really stood out for me is Nightbeat and Nonica find Brainstorm's briefcase, the oft-mentioned briefcase from Season 1, mm-hmm. and Nightbeat opens it up. And you get these, and this is a combination of good artwork and writing, the panels are all out of place. Yeah. And you're supposed to read it in the order denoted by the elevator signs in the back as they go down. Mm-hmm. And so you're supposed to go, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, but it's completely out of order in the panels. And yeah, that's important in the next trade.
Yep. For me, I like, because it's been a while, and I don't, like I said, myself, Amy, and Ender covered the first 5 trades of this series, and Rid, and it's been years since I've gone back and read any of that stuff, so I like seeing what actually happened to the fusion cannon, because I forgot he didn't have the fusion cannon.
Yeah, he melts it down as part of his sort of punishment. Whoops.
Yeah, I absolutely love that, and one of the reasons why I said when I read Nightbeat in this is I hear you is because, nah, I'm pretty insufferable. That's something you've said often.
Yeah, probably. Seems familiar.
You put Galvatron in, Joe?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, but issue 32, absolutely love it. The art is amazing. The writing is great. The story is kind of mainlining a little bit more for me. Like you said, there's no constant flashback kind of thing, which is fine. And like I said, I like the flashbacks. It's just when I think about them and when I think of how many times that they went back and forth, it just kind of...
Yeah, it's fine. No, I said it before, too. I mean, I appreciated that the trial only lasted the couple issues. Mm. And I think at that point, yeah, Roberts had done what he wanted to with it. So it made sense to end it instead of try to keep it going through the whole arc. Not to mention, it would have really stank, I think. You've got all these, horrific scenes of all of your main cast having been slaughtered. If you had that, jarring sequence where you go back and everyone's fine and you're just at the trial.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely love issue 32. I thought it was great. With issue 33, we get Slaughterhouse Part 2, The Road Not Taken. Oh, of course, a Robert Frost reference. Why not?
Yeah, he loves those. Roberts, that is. So.
Yeah. Oh, rewind on the cover. Oh, man. I remember when I went to get this at the comic shop. I'm like, really? Rewind, really? They're really going to rub it in our faces that he's dead?
Well, he comes... So the reveal at the end of the previous issue was that Rewind is alive. However, it is the alternate universe Rewind, and we actually get into the full explanation as both Nightbeat and Nautica just sort of join together and work together to figure out exactly what happened. And we see sort of, again, Nod, I really like the artwork, a nod to the fact I really like the artwork. We actually see the sort of past events as they now unfolded for this alternate crew. Yeah. And I liked the kind of callbacks to stuff we've already seen on the Lost Light and in the other earlier stages of the series. We get another sort of slaughter of the crew as Rewind's version of events is played. And so we see that again. All right, I'll get into the other bit in a minute. So... The resolution here is they essentially destroy this lost light.
Yeah.
And everyone on it. And it's done in... There's two great sequences here, and I'll get to my other favorite, and then again, like before, I'll just shut up. So, Megatron is berated by Skids for not caring what happens to the planet below. Because they could just destroy the alternate lost light and sort of leave. Or they could do it in a way that won't harm the planet. And Megatron has basically decided, well, there's no mechanical life on the planet, so who cares? Let's just blow it up. And Skids absolutely berates him and tells him, you know, if you continue just sort of doing what you want, then your change of heart and the insignia on your chest means nothing.
Yeah, I loved that.
Another great sort of speech and another sign that, you know, Megatron's going to have to kind of own up and face this, his past and be different.
So
I loved that. The other reveal I really liked, Nightbeat in searching Brainstorm's lab for a way to shrink Megatron or somebody down so they can get to the alternate Lost Light's engines, discovers that Brainstorm was actually a Decepticon.
Yeah.
So that's fairly important. And all through season one and the like, yeah, he was a Decepticon. So, yeah, the issue ends with the Lost Light... alternate Lost Light is disappeared. The original Lost Light and its crew are restored, and Rewind, not having an alternate universe version anymore, because his main... Rewind being an alternate universe version, and his main universe version being deceased, slash blown to pieces, is still there. Now, the other moment, the third one I want to get into now, and again... hate to do it again, but the art here is so good.
It is, yes.
The sequence with Rewind remembering the DJD torturing Chrome Dome to death to get Rewind to... well, A, they tell Chrome Dome that if he injects himself and forgets Rewind, they'll let him live, which is terrible. And, yeah, they torture him to death, and you get this... horrific shot of him with his finger needles jabbed through his eye plate as he, you know, died screaming his name. That's awful. That actually stayed with me for a few days, so...
yeah. Yeah, that... oh, God, that's heart-wrenching.
So, yeah, I mean, Chrome Dome and Rewind's relationship was one of the bright spots of the earlier seasons, and it was used for, A, some real heart to the book... so seeing how that ended up in both universes, how shitty it ended up for both of them.
Yeah.
That's not very nice.
No, that's not very nice at all. Rewind and Chrome Dome, they're essentially the Romeo and Juliet of Transformers, really.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, yeah, and it always seems to end in tragedy.
That's what I'm saying. Not necessarily that Chrome Dome is going to be like, you know, Rewind. I'm saying it seems like the two of them always face the hardest tragedies in this series, and that's almost as sad as seeing some robot cut in half lengthways.
That wasn't really sad. That was more shocking. I mean, we didn't know Ambulon all that well, but it was still pretty crappy.
Yeah.
I did like Ambulon for what little we saw of him.
Yep. Volume 6, 28 to 33. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite... it's a toss-up between this one and... the final volume, which reads so much better in trade than it did when I had the individual issues. It's a toss-up, but it's really good.
Yeah.
I loved this season as a whole. We'll just get that out of the way. But yeah, the Slaughterhouse arc and everything else were some of my favorite stuff in this.
If I was going to rate the trade overall, the entire book, I'd probably give it 4 out of 5. For the whole story?
Yeah, I'd probably sit it at about a 4.5.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about More Than Meets the Eye, Volume 7, after this.
I can't deal with that now.
It's Showtime Synergy. The latest review podcast from the Geekcast Radio Network is here. So join TFG1 Mike, Nicole Hailstorm, and myself, Lady Wreck, as we will be reviewing all 65 episodes of Joe and the Holograms in a 25-episode-long podcast. You can find Showtime Synergy on iTunes and GeekCastRadio.com. We are the truly outrageous podcast that you want to be listening to.
Hey folks, we are back here on the Pullbags Autobotly April, first episode of Autobotly April, and we're going to be talking about More Than Meets the Eye, Volume 7. This collects issues 34 through 38. And this is right before the... Well, no, More Than Meets the Eye did not get roped into Combiner Wars, did they?
Nope.
Good.
Yeah. I don't think Roberts likes the event books to the point that he consistently berated Revolution in his issue, which was hilarious. And yeah, he's right for not really liking them, because Dark Cybertron did no favors to More Than Meets the Eye or its cast.
No, not at all.
So, 34, yeah.
34, yay!
So again, we get...
yeah, you're going to really have to synopsize the hell out of this one, because I was so... The first page into this trade, I was lost. I had no idea what the hell was going on.
So before we get into it, I will just say, I love this issue. And that's all I'll give for that sort of thing. So just, you know, to sum it up. So we start on board, or on a planet, Ofsted 17, and it is actually the planet that was beside the Lost Light. So,
oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, the people that are here know nothing of, they just sort of reappeared,
mm-hmm.
and know nothing about, you know, what happened on board the Lost Light and ended up on the planet.
Wow.
Yeah, so... I mean, it's explained pretty quickly. We jump from them to the past. All right, so I'll just continue this one storyline at a time at this point.
Okay.
We go to Messatine, which, for anyone who remembers reading some of the really old original Transformers comics, was the planet that Megatron started his writing on that began the Decepticon movement.
Hmm.
And as we continue on that planet, we see what happens. There's basically a meltdown, and the miners are all evacuated.
Right.
Now, stuff in between that, we get some great character development for Megatron, where his fear of his brain being messed with that we saw in the previous trade during the trial, mm-hmm. we see why. It's because his brain was messed with before, and that's why he was the evil, sort of not as smart as his writings Transformer after that. So it's kind of neat that they try to kind of retcon the fact that Megatron's done some really dumb stuff in the comics, i.e. the Costa run and some of the others, and they've tried to kind of reconcile it with the fact that he's actually intelligent in this series. The real life reason is we went from an incredibly shitty writer to a good one.
Yeah.
There's not a nice way to put that. Costa's run is awful. And actually, a bit of background just for a second. More Than Meets the Eye actually got Andrew back into reading comics. And he had no interest in Transformers, but I kept on him to read this. And he was somebody who knew nothing about Transformers, you know, hadn't watched it, that kind of thing. And he followed along, and he loved this series. And, yeah, the way... And I had him skip over the Costa run. I gave him sort of a quip synopsis of what happened in the earlier stuff, and it still worked. So, anyway. So, yeah, that's the past storyline. It ends with Megatron and all of the miners evacuate the planet. But his friend, Terminus, who was helping smuggle the writings out, has disappeared and is gone for whatever reason. And we find out that the meltdown, by the way, was actually the fault of Brainstorm, who has used his briefcase to travel back in time. And this is post... Now, the previous issue ended with Brainstorm having made everybody in the bar, Swerves, pass out. And just says, I can do whatever the hell I want. And now we know he's back in the past. So there we go. That's the summation of the past stuff. The present stuff on Ofsted 17 involves First Aid, Trailbreaker, Blue Streak, and Mainframe. They come across what looks to be a battle and find a damaged Cybertronian. And in the end, they realize that it's Voss, a member of the Decepticon Justice Division.
Yep.
In the end, nobody agrees to help him because the DJD are seriously bad news. However, First Aid stays, being a medic. And unfortunately, First Aid figures out who Voss is when they finally read the Find, Kill, Cleanse, which is the DJD's motto. So at this point, he and Trailbreaker have been giving Voss Energon. And so this is pretty heartbreaking. Doesn't make me very happy. So Trailbreaker gives him probably too much of his Energon, and First Aid leaves to go get help. Trailbreaker activates his force field, which will allow him to be safe from Voss.
Mm-hmm.
Got in front of myself there. Unfortunately, he has trapped himself inside his force field with Kaon, one of the other more dangerous members of the DJD, who murders him horribly, ripping out his brain and crushing it against his own force field. Now,
poor Trail Cutter.
Yeah, well, Trailbreaker, well, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's Hasbro's fault for not trademarking the name. Anyway, so in amongst all this, probably the biggest development present day is the fact that Kaon took a copy of Megatron's speech renouncing Decepticonism with him.
Yeah.
So we get two major storylines here. One, the DJD have killed Trailbreaker and now know that Megatron has defected. And two, in the past, something is happening. Brainstorm has gone back in time to do something. We have no idea what. But, yeah. The two things I took from this, the Trailbreaker stuff is heartbreaking.
It is, yes.
The fact that they made somebody who was kind of a drunk joke character in the first season and redeemed him and made me care about him enough that I felt bad when he died was sad, because he was just getting his life together. Megatron had helped him do it.
Yep.
And yeah, he dies. And he does not return. Number two, man, Megatron's writings, they show pages of it in this.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. Roberts is such a good writer. And you can understand why people would want to follow him. Because he's, at that time, your literal form, as in what you transformed into, determined where you were in society.
Right.
So Megatron transformed basically into a mining tool. So that's all he was ever going to be. And yeah, you would definitely want to follow that. If you transformed into something more deemed more useful, you know, you were brought up higher, you lived in better conditions, et cetera, et cetera.
It's essentially Gattaca, folks.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I love this first issue once I figured out what the hell was going on.
And that's fair, because there's a lot of jumping in that one.
Well, like, okay, so I didn't know, like, going from the end of 33 to the beginning of 34, I didn't realize that was the planet that was above the alternate Lost Light at first. Like, I didn't know what the hell planet that was.
Yeah.
That's why I was so lost in the very beginning of it. So
yeah, the time frame is jarring, and it's mentioned a little later, but only in a small snippet of dialogue.
Yeah. With 35, with 34, with the whole Brainstorm thing, like, why couldn't they have just used Counterpunch? Punch, Counterpunch, like, seriously? That would have made a hell of a lot more sense, I guess, in my mind. But,
well, not later on.
Well, no, not later on, but I'm just saying, at this point, I'm like, So wait, Brainstorm was bad, but he wasn't bad, but he is... Like, what the hell, Brainstorm? Make up your mind already.
Well, he worked for the Decepticons just because he wanted to build a time machine. Yeah. That was all of it. I mean, the Decepticons have all the best technology because, of course, they steal and murder for it. So, yeah, working for them. Now, in the end, what happened was on the alternate Lost Light, Brainstorm was working with the DJD, and it resulted in them slaughtering the alternate Lost Light. So, yeah, he's not real popular at this point.
No. Not at all. All right, so 35. What do we got for 35?
35 opens, and oh boy, is this important later, in the Functionalist universe. This is a alternate universe, as we eventually figure out. So I'm just going to spoil things. I don't really have a choice here. It's an alternate universe we discover that its existence is being rewritten on Rewind's database. So he is remembering this alternate universe as the normal one. And we'll get into why soon enough. One quick note. There's two character moments here at the start I love. One is the conversation between Chrome Dome and Rewind, where they refuse, or sorry, Rewind refuses to stay with Chrome Dome right now, because this is not the same Rewind. I like that they made that clear, that they're not just, you know, back together immediately and everything's fine. I like that, you know, things aren't the same. Each of them both watched the other die pretty terribly. And I like that that changed them and their relationship. It would have been lazy if they had just gone back to normal. The second moment I really like is Megatron's obvious guilt over the death of Trailbreaker. And you can see that, you know, he's guilty, as he should be, because the DJD is his creation, literally. And, yeah, they killed somebody who he was working with. So we get a bit of an exposition dump at this point as well about what's happened in terms of Brainstorm jumping through time. And they ask themselves, if you were a Decepticon, how would you use a time machine? Well, you'd go back in time to change how the war ended, as Megatron points out.
Yeah, very true.
So after this, we jump from the back to the Functionalist universe, which I won't talk about much because it's not important yet.
Yeah.
It's important in season one of Lost Light. Which is another series. But anyway, so I don't even have to talk about it, which is nice. So anyway, we go back to present day. They're trying to figure out where the heck Brainstorm is going. They decide he's probably going back in time to murder Orion Pax, who, of course, becomes Optimus Prime.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. I thought just the fact of, you know, it reminds me of Wardon.
Yeah.
It really does. Obviously, it's not the aerial bots, but it's Brainstorm instead. And obviously, the aerial bots were not going back to murder Optimus Prime.
Well, they almost did, because they're dumb.
Well, they just came online. They were new bots. You know, I don't know.
Sure. Anyway.
But yeah, no, I kind of love the time travel stuff with Brainstorm.
I did. The stuff I don't like is the alternate universe stuff, which I now realize, of course, and at the time I kind of figured it would eventually be a setup.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that it worked, especially I like that it was really only the couple issues that they did it.
Yeah.
First
I didn't realize it was an alternate universe. I thought it was Rewind's dream.
Yeah, no. It's rewriting his database and replacing the actual history.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Having said that, any sort of misgivings I have about that issue are completely overwritten by how good the next issue is. So.
Oh yeah, well with 35, the only other note that I really had for 35 was I had a couple of notes. Rewind, Ian Chrome Dome. Okay then, this is all very awkward now.
But I liked that. Like I said, it would have been lazy if they'd had just decided, like, hey, he's the same guy. We'll just continue on.
I love Minimus. Minimus is awesome. I mean, technically it's Magnus, but yeah, that's what I liked about the... Okay, look, Ultra Magnus, I don't care what anyone says, Ultra Magnus is not just a white repaint of Optimus Prime, okay? Ultra Magnus is his own character. He has his own values. And in this series, Roberts took it to another level where the Ultra Magnus character is just nothing but armor. Anybody can... I mean, Rewind was stuck in that armor for a while. You know.
Well, he hid in it, but anyway, yeah.
Well, yeah, I know, but, you know. And then, of course, poor Dominus. You have no face. Did Prime take it? But yeah, 36. Go ahead and give us the skinny on your favorite issue here.
Oh man, it's great. So 36 opens with the past and Orion Pax and his band, who we saw way back in the third trade of More Than Meets the Eye, are back together. And they're trying to protect a hotspot, which is where Sparks, so in other words, new Transformers, are born slash being formed. And basically they're there to try to guard against whatever Brainstorm's going to do. I will note at this point then, Brainstorm does not show up in this issue. So they went to the wrong place. Again, we'll figure out why later. But anyway, the meat of this issue are all the character interactions, which are glorious. So first of all, Rodimus in the past is trying desperately to warn Trailbreaker about what will happen in the future. So trying to prevent his death. The other one is another great Megatron speech. There's a phone call where Optimus... Megatron calls for Rodimus, but Orion Pax, the future Optimus Prime, answers.
Yeah.
And current Megatron has a past, or sorry, is speaking to past Optimus Prime, essentially. Yeah. And it's beautiful.
It is so awesome.
Another great sort of, you know, Megatron running into his past again and really lamenting his decisions. And it just works so well. And this is another one of those that if the rest of the issue is still great, there's some really good action at the end as the current evil Prime's forces attack the hotspots trying to change the sparks.
Right.
And there's some great stuff there. But honestly, if the rest of the issue were crap, I'd still love it just for that speech. It's another one of those that's so good. And there's a couple of really neat little touches. Rodimus is really concerned about protecting this hotspot. Mm-hmm. And it's because if you paid a lot of attention to previous issues, you'd know it's actually where Rodimus was born. Mm-hmm. So he is literally saving his own life by protecting the hotspot.
Yep.
The number two thing here is something we won't figure out for much later, but there are more insinuations as to the identity of the DJD leader, Tarn.
Isn't it Tarn?
Yeah. Yes. And so there are heavy insinuations as to who it is in this issue. However, it's not him. But having said that, all of the clues to who it actually was are in this issue and a previous one with that character, who is actually Tarn. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's really well done.
Yeah, Roberts does so much with the writing. He doesn't just write a Transformer story to write a Transformer story. I love it when he throws in various G1 references, like the color-coded lasers. Come on, everybody had to chuckle at that. Come on. You know, but what he does is he takes it and turns it on its head. He basically, I hate to put it this way, but he basically emotionally rapes his readers every single issue, because there's something in this series, in every single issue, for somebody that has been a Transformers fan their entire life. The first one for me that I'd noticed out of 36 was Roller? Roller? You mean he's not just Prime's trailer mate?
Yeah, he briefly appeared way back in Elegant Chaos in the third trade. And it's heavily insinuated that Roller is in fact Tarn. As I said before, he is not. And the two last bits that I love in this, one, and made me kind of feel something, one is humor, and that is Tailgate's hero worship of Orion Pax continues, because he developed that way back in the third trade, and he actually gets to meet him here, and it's hilarious. And number two is the ending, which again made me sad, because in the end, Chrome Dome has them wipe everybody's memories, because, for example, Skids is there, and Skids is part of the Lost Light crew and doesn't remember this. So to keep the timeline intact, they have to wipe everybody's memory. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, Trailbreaker insists on shaking Chrome Dome's hand. And before Rodimus can stop him, Trailbreaker has forgotten Rodimus's warnings that would keep him alive. So now we know Trailbreaker's still going to die. And that was sad again. Roberts is a mean person when it comes to the death.
Yes, yes. As long as he never kills Rodimus, I'll be okay.
Well, actually, no, wait. Anyway.
So we get to 37 in a row.
Yay! Oh, boy. Yeah, nice Clerks reference. So,
of course.
37 opens with our crew has jumped again, this time actually into the timeline of the third trade of More Than Meets the Eye, but we don't know that yet. And we jump from there to present day. Now, in the present day, the big development is people are starting to forget Megatron.
Yeah, I love that.
And actually, this one is called Elegant Chaos. Whoops, I can't remember what the old trade was. Anyway, so people are starting to forget Megatron, which obviously becomes later or important later, because we realize that's who Brainstorm was trying to kill.
Yeah.
And we actually get alternate viewpoints of a number of things we saw from both the third trade and from a much earlier Robert story way back during the Costa days, which was just called, that wasn't Chaos. It was part of the Police Action trade, which is one of the only ones I own.
Volume 3 was Annual 2012 and issues 9 to 11. So...
Yeah, of More Than Meets the Eye. I'm talking about the Transformers as in Costa's run. It was the fifth trade of that, which was Police Action. And anyway, the rest of it is garbage because it's Costa's writing. But there's a single issue in there written by Roberts, which goes back into the history between Megatron and Prime and their first meetings. So anyway, some of that is also referenced here. Important bits are Rodimus and co. finally find Brainstorm.
Yep.
And he continues jumping through time, this time into the brawl that would result in Megatron's first meeting with Optimus. And at the same time, we see what happened to Whirl and why, and the reasoning why he has no hands and had the Ampurata happen to him, much the way Shockwave did. And lastly, like I said, Megatron and co. figure out that, oops, that's where Brainstorm is going, is to kill Megatron.
Yeah.
So events transpire the way they're supposed to. Mm-hmm. And the two things I loved most in this book, one, Roberts does the quick character moments really well. Cyclonus actually apologizes for his domestic abuse of Tailgate.
Yeah.
In a really quick sort of segment, which is well done and good that they referenced that and they progressed on it. Two, I loved seeing everything from an alternate angle. It was neat to see the same sequences redone, as well as retconning things such as Nightbeat seeing Rung in the past, yet Rung doesn't remember Nightbeat.
Yeah, that was a little strange, but like
so now
said,
we know why. The other issue, too, by the way, you were talking about Roberts playing the long game. Rung is holding a model of the Lost Light, meaning that Nightbeat saw future Rung. But we're talking about an issue that was drawn up and written, I think, I can't remember when Costa's run was, but we're talking years before More Than Meets the Eye even existed.
Yeah.
And that's amazing that Roberts remembered that. And not only that, but there's the line from Nightbeat in Dark Cybertron where he sees the Lost Light and says he's seen it somewhere. Well, the place he saw it was the model Rung was holding.
Yeah, was here, yeah.
It's really well done. Like, everything just kind of clicks together perfectly, and just, ugh, I don't know how he keeps track of all this stuff.
Lots and lots of whiskey, I bet.
I think that would be how he forgets this stuff.
But yeah, no, 37, we finally get kind of answers to Brainstorm and all that. Like you said, he's going after Megatron, not Optimus. And again, we sort of see another, well, at least this universe's Megatron origin. I mean,
yep.
We have, there's so many Megatron origins over the last 30, 35 years or so.
This concept of, you know, going as a whole for a second, this concept of Megatron as a freedom fighter who was needed because of how corrupt the government was is one of the most interesting versions of Megatron I think they ever had.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And by a lot. Like, yeah. I find it so much more interesting than the... There's a place for the, you know, mustache-twirling evil... I'm okay with that, but we've seen that a number of times before. Making him somebody who was legitimately needed at the time is really interesting to me.
Yeah, it gives the character of Megatron depth. He's not just out to ruin the world just so he can conquer it. He's not just, you know...
He legitimately wanted to make things better for his race.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, he ended up taking it to the extreme. And to a certain extent, Starscream was correct when he said that he couldn't control everything. You know, he created these horrible kill squads like the DJD and these horrible Phase Sixers like Overlord. Actually, most notably Overlord. And he couldn't control them.
Yeah.
Nobody could because Overlord is just ungodly powerful and he's nuts. And the DJD are just evil.
Sadistic assholes. Yeah.
And so is Overlord to a certain extent. So, yeah, I love how much depth he gives Megatron through this series. Mm. And again, makes him more interesting, in my opinion, than he's ever been before.
So basically what we're trying to say here, folks, when it comes to Megatron at points, because he created these various... robot races and things like that. Between the DJD and Overlord, just Overlord by himself, Megatron is the biggest proctologist in Transformers history. Wall-to-wall assholes.
Well, to be fair, I mean, he's partially responsible for Shockwave.
That's true.
As well. Now, he's not responsible for Senator Shockwave having everything stripped away. The government that Megatron wants to take down is responsible for that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Megatron still helped along that path, although so did others. I mean, Overlord's cries for attention and general chaos helped, and pretty much everybody fell into place. Soundwave, unfortunately, accidentally helped him. So, anyway, getting way off topic.
Yeah, issue 37 was great. I thought it was really interesting seeing the whole Megatron angle and actually finding out why Brainstorm is doing this.
Or at least what his purpose is. Why is sort of is finally explained in the next issue. Although we see hints of it because he looks at Quark, who, oh, God damn it, Roberts. Quark's fate and what happened to him is one of the meanest things in the entire series. And results in, results in some of like the saddest deaths I've read in comics. Anyway, back to happier times.
See, folks, IDW and James Roberts and John Barber and the Transformers crew—they don't need us to call in and vote to who live to see who lives or dies. They just do it, and they just make us feel it later.
Ugh. So, yeah, 38.
Yes, the final issue of this trade.
Yay, which, this was a terrific compilation.
It was. Absolutely, yeah.
We open in the future with, or the present, sorry, with Megatron going nuts because he finally realizes, you know,
I'm gonna die!
Yeah.
Oh, God!
And we get the wonderful moment at the end where Megatron shows off his Rodimus star, which Rodimus gives out to crew members who he feels do exceptional work. And I loved the end of this where Magnus just says, shows his off and just goes, neatest handwriting. You? And Megatron just sighs and says, for abandoning my evil ways. So some good comedy there. Then we go back to the past and Rodimus and co. jump in to try to stop Brainstorm. They succeed in getting Brainstorm to stop. However, as Rung points out, Brainstorm had stopped himself because he couldn't actually pull the trigger and kill someone. He spent all this time making weapons to kill people, but he's never done it himself. And he can't bring himself to do it. However, Alternate Universe Rewind then shoots Megatron and kills him.
In the past. Rewind! What the hell, man?
And he's supposed to be the kind one. Now, having said that, again, oh, hell with it. I'll get to it at the end of the issue. So, Megatron is dead in the past, yet still exists in the present, which offers up a whole lot of questions. Now, as they're discussing this conundrum, the body of Megatron is taken away by Whirl, and he pulls the spark that Brainstorm had with him since the fifth trade of More Than Meets the Eye and implants it into Megatron's corpse, bringing him back to life. Meaning everything is full circle, that Megatron was actually a 0.1 percenter born in the fifth trade of More Than Meets the Eye in the present, and he was transferred, making him the first spark transfer ever, which is why he wouldn't divulge what he was. He's the first ever hybrid transformer.
Yeah.
So everything comes full circle and makes sense. Continuing that, so after this, everything's hokey-dory because Megatron's alive. The only downer is our crew are stuck in the past.
Yeah, they are.
And so in a series of events, which is wonderful because it makes everything in the series make sense. Why there were Spark Eaters in the first trade is covered here. Where the Lost Light came from and why it's Cybertronian technology that somebody else had is covered, because it was built on Cybertron. Why its engines work and why it's never been replicated is covered, because it was stolen after it was invented.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. The last bit we get is that the functionalist universe survived whatever happened. It didn't erase its existence. That universe still exists, A. B, we're getting more into the issue then. The events I loved in this issue, A, everything kind of fitting together nicely. I loved how they tied into the first trade into this. They even had them record the warning to not leave, which was from that first trade.
Right.
So I enjoyed that. Two, the other thing I loved was Megatron had to listen to why Rewind, the sort of nicest, smallest Transformer, murdered him.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I agree with the train. That was really good timing. So,
hey, you leave Astro Train out of this.
Yeah, no, he's dead too.
Hey,
what? That was in R.I.D. So,
jeez.
Oh boy, I loved the, it was another great speech. Rewind is right that the why Rewind would do it is, yes, things suck for the Cybertronian race under the functionalists, and things are awful, but billions of other beings and hundreds and hundreds of other planets are now safe. So it's sort of the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few sort of math.
So Rewind is Spock.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's the logic, and he's right. It's the logical thing. Yes, things suck for their race, but everyone else in the entire universe has it way better. And so, yeah, he does it for that reason. Now, Whirl also comes full circle because, A, we find out why he's kind of a dink in the previous issue because he had his emotions and his hands stripped away from him.
Yep.
And B, he revives Megatron just to get back at the functionalists so that they don't get to rule like we see in the alternate universe.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. I was not expecting Whirl to do that.
Yeah, to essentially be the... See, I don't know if he's the hero or what he is, which is why I love this comic so much.
He's the Punisher of the More Than Meets the Eye universe.
He's the hero in the sense that we care about our main characters, but I mean, you know, he allows billions to die on other planets. So, yeah, real fun choice.
Yeah. We should know by now, there are no fun choices when it comes to James Roberts and his More Than Meets the Eye title at all. I mean, there really aren't, because he goes for the gut. He goes for, he doesn't, he's not going to just, you know, give us something to, as I said earlier, you know, he's got moments where we can laugh and find enjoyable, but he takes those and he then twists them and turns them and just gives us these jaw-dropping tragedies. That's what More Than Meets the Eye is. It's a comedy filled with tragedies.
I think the most impressive thing he's done is I look at somebody like Andrew, who, unlike us, didn't grow up with the Transformers, doesn't know these characters, but he loves this series and he cares about these characters. And the fact that he can make someone who has no ability to, you know, has no attachment to these characters previously care about these, you know, robots, you know, these fictional robots is astounding. And it's a testament to how good his writing is. The best comics make you feel something. The Phoenix Saga, The Killing Joke, trying to remember others, but of course now
The Death of Superman,
now when I really need to, Watchmen. Yeah, you feel something at the things that happen to these fictional characters. And it's the same with the best of television. You know, you care what happens to Jesse Pinkman or to Vic Mackey, even though he's horrible scum. But, yeah, it's he's so good at weaving, and all the while kind of weaving things past and present and making this plot lock into pace, into place. And it's not always perfect. I would never say that. But man, this is the best Transformers has been for me.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, his comic represents all of the best of it. And I don't mean any disrespect to some of the great series that also exist. I love Beast Wars. I love Transformers Prime. But, jeez. I mean, the writing in this, you know, Code of Hero is one of the saddest, best individual Transformers stories. And some of his writing is right on par with that, or at least close to it, and he does it pretty consistently.
Yeah, I would say that he does, and I agree with you. See, I don't want to compare the comic to the cartoon stuff, because, yes, Code of Hero was epic, amazing, and it was very well written, and the whole Dinobot story culminated in that, but the difference is, with IDW, they let Roberts, and not necessarily to a lesser extent, but they let Roberts and Barber go, 57 issues before they rebooted?
Yeah.
Into, you know, so, I mean, we essentially had, 5.5 years or so?
Yeah, it was 5 years for More Than Meets the Eye. Started in 2011. And it should be noted, I mentioned it before.
6 years, actually. But, ended last year.
And
I
mentioned it before. Roberts got a couple issues to kind of cheat and set things up during the Costa run as well.
Yeah, he got Death of Optimus Prime and
I was referring to things. The police action, and then he wrote some of the stuff during Chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos Theory. That was the issue during the police action arc. There we go.
There you go.
Yeah, and then which led into Elegant Chaos.
Elegant Chaos, yeah. Yeah, no, but Volume 6 and 7 for More Than Meets the Eye, I love them. I think they're great. I said this years ago when Ender, Amy, and I covered the first 5 trades of this series at one point, that my initial hesitation to this series was that I did not know a majority. Like, when I first saw this series come out, other than the fact of Ender telling me I needed to read it simply for Shockwave's origin, was that the only person on the Lost Light that I recognized at the time was Rodimus. And I pretty much jumped on board just because I'm a Rodimus fanboy. But now, after so many years, after reading all this stuff, I love this series. I love the art. I think Milne is an amazing, epic artist. The colorists between Burcham and LaFuente and anybody else that they bring on besides those three are really, really great. And Roberts just kills it with the writing. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, this is the, you know, and the comparison that he gets is to the old UK stuff from Simon Furman, which was really good, but people have this weird, I own all of it, it should be noted. Actually, I own every single Transformers run, with the exception of, I do not own All Hail Megatron, because I hate it, and I do not own the Mike Costa run. But aside
why
from...
Why do you hate... Oh, it's time for... It's an explanation for another episode, anyway.
Oh, because it's terrible. I mean, it's poorly written. Everyone's out of character. Megatron is portrayed as an imbecile in All Hail Megatron. I mean, he is an idiot in that series. This idea that, I won and I didn't know what to do. Now I'm stuck on Earth. I can't do anything else. Yip-dee-doo. It just makes him come off like a moron. And you know, Starscream points it out, and he's right. But anyway, so I own all the Marvel US stuff, all the Marvel UK stuff, Dreamwave, everything else from IDW, et cetera, et cetera. So people always compare this to the Marvel UK stories. People forget all of the bad issues in the Marvel UK stories. It's like the old Chris Claremont X-Men stories. People remember it and remember it as being this great, perfect series because they just remember the really good stories. They don't remember all the crap ones in between and some of the poor characterization. So it's kind of the same thing. The Marvel UK is terrific overall, and there's some amazing story arcs, but people kind of forget some of the not-so-good stuff in there. Like, people revere Time Wars, but they forget that Soundwave's Decepticons do absolutely nothing and exist in the series for no reason. It was, ugh, why even include them? They wasted time with that. Anyway.
All right, folks, join us next week here in Autobotly April for the pullbag as
rating for volume 7.
Oh. Whoops.
You forgot that.
Fuck.
I gave 4.5. I gave 4.5 out of 5 for 6. Okay. So for 7, I'd say a really high 4, like 4.25. It's just under 6.
It's just under 6. What the hell?
No, just under volume 6.
Oh, okay.
The main issue being there's some really great stuff in it. There's some great speeches again, but there's some stuff that didn't work well. The transitions are a little more jarring in 7 than they were in 6 between timelines, and there's an awful lot going on. Now, it still clicks together well, but it's not perfect, so...
Yeah, absolutely. For 7, for me, I'll probably give it a 3.5. I really did enjoy it, but again, if I am completely lost at the very beginning of a book... And that's my own problem, I guess. But yeah, 3.5 out of 5 for me for 7. Coming up next week, we dive into Robopolitics with Not Rid, X Rid, Transformers, formerly known as Robots in Disguise, Volume 6 and 7. That's going to be interesting because I do not remember. I remember these, but I do not remember these. And
I have the same issue. I mean, I hate to say it, but there's a drop... The first 5 trades for RID were solid. They are some of Barber's best work. And after that, though, there's too much other stuff going on with him because XRID is sort of the flagship title that has to set up all the events.
Yeah.
And, oh, boy. Does not always work.
Nope.
By the way, some of some of Barber's best work right now is his Marvel stuff. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah.
The Doctor Strange Punisher series was outstanding. Like, much better than I thought it was going to be. I was really impressed. And it comes off almost as a comedy, which is great. Anyway.
Well, you put Doctor Strange, who is somewhat comical, and the Punisher, who is most of the time severely depressing. Again, comedy filled with tragedies. Wow. Oh, boy. So, yeah, join us next week, folks, as we talk about Robots in Disguise, Volumes 6 and 7. All as I remember from at least Volume 6 was Dawn of the Autobots. Optimus Prime goes back to Earth and faces whatever he has to face. And I do remember in the beginning of that series, of that volume 6, something to do with Thundercracker and writing a play. Oh, Lord.
It had to have some comedy in it.
Yeah, I guess. So where can the people find you online, sir?
At Nightbeat, where today I was ranting about Mass Effect Andromeda.
You can find me at TFTU and Mike. You can find at the Pullbag on Twitter, at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. Make your great escape into comics, and we will catch you next week when we are actually back on Cybertron.
This is getting expensive.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at DeCian.com. DASIEN.com.
Well, it's finished. You may not recognize him. He is no longer Orion Pax. Now he is the first of our new defenders, Optimus Prime.
I was wrong, my friends. I admired Megatron merely because he was powerful. I failed to see how he used that power.
You've just heard the latest episode of The Pullbag, the GCRN's comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate our show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Call the voicemail line, 502-526-5821. Please remember to tell us the show you are leaving the message for, and your name. Become a fan of us on Facebook by searching GeekCast Radio Network. Send us an email feedback at geekcastradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at GeekCast Radio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics and unleash the geek in you.